welcome to The Calling. I'm Andrew Boyer. I'm here with Marek Zabriskie, and we're back again, this time with Josh Barton. And Marek, you're going to tell us a little bit about Josh in a second, but first, let me just say what we're doing here. We decided to create a podcast where we talk a little bit about what drives meaning in people's lives, why they do the things that they do, and how they got there, and maybe even what happened before their lives that got them there. And so this is our fourth episode. And Marek, you want to introduce Josh?
Sure. We're really excited to have Josh join our staff. He's just joined us in September, but he's been in Greenwich for 8 years. And before that, he was in Arizona for 8 years working as a youth minister. So he has 16 years of background in youth ministry, which is really exceptional. This is a field where the average youth minister lasts 18 months. And Josh has not only great staying power, but he's got great expertise and knowledge about running youth programs and building them and working with teens and their families. And that's invaluable to us. And the fact that he knows Greenwich already and has worked here with teens is super important to us, because this is a really special community. And we really wanted someone who loves this community, understands the families and youth here. So we're so excited to have him on board.
Welcome, Josh.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So, Josh, when you look back, was there a moment when you recall that changed the course of your life that kind of led you to the path you're on now?
Yeah, there's two moments that kind of stick out. First, when I was 21, I was doing the normal, I guess you could say, 21-year-old thing, living the good life, doing what I thought was a good life. And essentially, it came to a point where one night, this is the specific moment, is one night a buddy and I were out, and we were out late having a good time. And then the next day was not as good of a time. And I was in college, and I reeked of the night before, just like I was sweating out like my pores. And I remember after that was a math class, early morning math class, I had to leave school. I had more school after that, but I left because I couldn't focus. There was nothing. And I remember going back home, and it was that day I said, if this is what life is about, if this is as good as it gets, this kind of sucks. And it was that moment, it was that day that I started asking bigger questions and exploring some, you know, what is the meaning? How do I fit into this? Where do I belong? So it was that morning, I remember. And then within 2 weeks, I found myself sitting around a table with like seven other college guys asking questions about faith and hearing about this Jesus and this Jesus guy that lived a couple thousand years ago. And then, you know, never really looked back. I mean, there was the real kind of 180 shift.
So was faith a big part of your childhood growing up, or not really?
It was in a very surface level thing. You know, it was the rule in my house was I had to go to church until I was 18, and, you know, went kicking and screaming pretty much every Sunday. Really didn't care much about it. I have these little ebbs and flows of like, oh, this week I'm, you know, all of a sudden I'm like, hey, I really want to follow Jesus. And then, you know, that would happen again 6 months later. But it wasn't like, I mean, I wasn't really involved in a youth group. I didn't have a ton of stuff. It was just kind of it was there.
Mm-hmm. And were you, what were you majoring in? Did you kind of do a full shift from what you were studying, or?
Yeah. I mean, at that time, from that moment on that day, I didn't know what I was majoring in. I was working full time in a restaurant. I was going to school because I thought that was the right thing to do. I really didn't have a way forward. I didn't have like a plan. I didn't know what my major was going to be. I was like, oh, I'll do business, because isn't that what you're supposed to do? But then, yeah, it did change after that. So the other shift that I had, the other moment that I had, was when a friend actually invited me to come to the youth group to volunteer in this middle school ministry. And I show up on a Wednesday night. There's about 50, 60 kids there. I show up, and I remember leaving going, that was the most ridiculous thing ever. Why would any adult subject themselves to that? I'm out of here. And my buddy said, no, you got to give it 3 weeks. And by the end of the third week, I was like, all right, I think I can do this. This is sweet.
So walk me through that. Why was it ridiculous?
I was, at the time I was 22. I thought I was a cool guy, but I was somewhat confident. I had a bunch of friends. I was, you know, pretty outgoing. But I walk into this room of middle schoolers, and it's almost like I reverted back to my middle school self. And I walk in, and I'm like, I shrink in the room, and I just got so intimidated by these kids that I thought were like looking at me like, who is this guy? What does he want? And I'm like, oh. But then I came back the next week, and they're like, I remember you. I remember you. And then by the third week, they're like, hey, high-fiving. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I can do this.
That's the third week is always the trick. So yeah. How does that play out here? What are you doing here with youth ministry?
Yeah, so, I mean, here's why I think youth ministry really matters is because, especially in 2022, I just don't know that there's a lot of spaces for kids to go and to be safe, to feel safe, to feel like they don't have to perform, to feel like they don't have to be quote unquote on, to prove themselves in whatever area it might be. And I feel like if we here can provide a space for students to come and ask questions and ask honest questions and wrestle through faith questions and wrestle through, you know, what's the purpose of my life? How do I fit into this bigger thing? And so that's kind of the idea is provide these spaces for kids to come and feel safe and have fun. And you know, hopefully start to trust the adults that are in the room, and we can, you know, we can do that.
How does this generation view religion? Is it different than other generations, would you say?
Admittedly, I'm not the expert on that, but I will say, yeah, but I do think I have a little bit of an idea with, you know, if we call Gen Z or whatever, I think they approach organized religion almost with like the side eye look of like, you know, I'm not sure that I trust this whole thing. Like, you know, in generations past, it was kind of just, this is what we did. You know, our family goes to church. We, you know, every Sunday, this is how it is. You're involved, this or that. And this generation, and with all the news that has come out over, say, the last 20 years with just some of the atrocities that have, you know, at the hands of the church, they're looking at it with a little bit of a, why should I trust you? Why should I, like, I've heard the stories, and why should I trust you? And I've seen the damage done by institutions. And so you don't get to have that role in my life anymore. And I think that's a big thing with the younger generation. Yeah. And I think it's fair.
Yeah. How do you overcome that? Like that must be the biggest challenge, right?
Yeah, it is. It is a challenge. And I think a lot of youth ministry and ministry in general just happens through relationship, right? So the way I picture a kid as, I don't think that I deserve to be respected. I don't think that I deserve to be trusted. I have to earn that. I have to earn their trust. I have to earn their respect. And that's done through relationship. You know, you got to consistently show up, consistently be there. And then they see and they're like, okay, I think I can trust this guy. And especially if your motives, they can see students, kids are far smarter than we give them credit for, I think. And they can see right through motives. If, you know, if your motives are, you know, I need something from you or I have expectations for you, they can see right through that. And so I think it's just a pure motives of, no, I just want to care for you. I want to provide a place for you to come and feel safe. And
they have massive BS detectors, don't they?
They do, yes.
But part of this is you have to go to them, don't you, in order to win their trust, to kind of earn the right to speak to them. I know you go to some football games and sporting events and plays and concerts.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Well, yeah, I think that's the way that it was done 20, 30 years ago was, hey, look at us over here. Look at what we're doing. Flashing lights, fog machines, come to us, you know. And the idea was, you come to us, we put on the show. I don't think that's what kids look for anymore. I don't think that's what they want. They don't. So the effective thing is to go to them. So where are they? Well, you know, all of our students, especially in this area, in Greenwich, especially Greenwich High School has, the amount of students that are involved in either sports or some sort of arts or something is through the roof, the percentages. And so, yeah, I have so many opportunities to go to where they are, go watch their football game, go watch their play, whatever. And And that's where I think a lot of it is. They see, oh, he's on my turf. I don't have to go to his turf.
And so the challenge, though, is that in colonial America, for instance, it used to be you couldn't build a church further than walking distance for all the – or people couldn't build a house further than walking distance from the local church because it was assumed that you would and you had to attend church on Sundays. Mm-hmm. And you attended church in the morning and then in the late afternoon. And the sermons were over an hour, and they were carefully constructed in such a way that you could take notes. And then you went home and you had a family meal, which is pretty – is more rare today than mm-hmm. it should be. And you discussed the sermon, and then you went back as a family and you heard another sermon, and you came home and had dinner and discussed that. That's a tremendous amount of faith impact on a family and on a child. Today, they say the average Episcopalian is in church once a month, average mainline church person once a month. So you have far little window with them. How do you make that work? Can you? Is it just too little?
I mean, I think you can. I mean, if I were to say you can't make it work, then that's pretty discouraging right off the bat. You know, you kind of have to work with what you got. And I think that's where ministry happens more than just when they come to you. It happens more than just when they're there on Sunday morning. You know, that's why you go to the games. That's why I've got one young man that I told him yesterday. I said, hey, I'm going to, after school one day, we're just going to go and I'll have a catch with you. He plays baseball. I said, I'll go. We'll just have a catch. That's really easy ministry, you know. So I think you have to get creative, and how do you figure out ways to, you know, different touch points with families and with students. It's definitely not, I mean, we don't get that anymore. On Sunday mornings, you know, it's not the number one priority, or the assumption is that you're going to be sitting in a pew at church.
And what do you think is the impact when you, when youth have faith that's really resident alive in them? How does that change things?
Well, I think we can probably draw the same parallel between adults, right? Like I think to some extent we're all either completely numbing ourselves and not asking questions, or we're all asking questions of how do I fit into something bigger? How do I fit into something bigger than myself? How do I fit into the purposes of the world and how things operate? And do I have a role? And so I think when it comes to faith with students is, you know, the question, the itch is, do I belong here? And if I belong, do I have a purpose? And so we get to provide, you know, that environment where we just ask and say, yeah, what is your purpose and do you belong? And I get to, you know, I get to answer that question, not for them, but I get to tell them here's how I think you belong in this. And for me, a lot of that is you are uniquely wired. You are uniquely made to fit into this bigger thing. And for whatever reason, God has called you and has a purpose for you, and he's given you gifts, he's given you talents, he's given you abilities, and you get, and that is an important part of the whole. You are an important part of the whole. And so I think youth are asking those questions. I don't know that they always know exactly how to articulate that, but they're asking those questions on a bigger scale. How do I fit into this?
And, you know, it's funny because I think that all these social media companies have tried to sort of scratch that same itch in a different way, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're trying to make, you know, kids feel like they belong and like that they're contributing and that they're part of something. And yet, you know, one of the big differences between a sermon and social media is like social media, you're getting a dopamine hit every 5 seconds.
Right.
And in a sermon, you're maybe not getting any.
Right.
unless somebody tells a joke or something. Otherwise, you know, we're all a little bit more dopamine addicted now, I think. And so how do you think about social media and the church, and like do you embrace it? We're doing a podcast.
Yeah.
So in some ways this is a type of social media, but like how do you kind of think about social media?
Yeah, well, social media is here to stay, right? It's not going anywhere. there's definitely, so I'm a father of a 12-year-old, you know, and so social media is like becoming a thing that is a, you know, it's a topic of discussion in my house. You know, my son said, I want to be a YouTube content creator. I'm like, oh, no.
A lot of kids, yeah. Something like 60%.
You want to run a hedge fund? Don't do that.
Yeah.
No, there's a statistic that's, I think it's over 50% of like 12-year-olds or whatever want to be a YouTube influencer when they grow up. It's like that's the goal. Yeah,
yeah, that's actually like a career thing that is. Yeah, like school counselors and you know are that's what they're hearing. I want to be a YouTuber. I want to be TikToker.
And why wouldn't you? Right, like those seem to be at the top of the pile.
Right. So I think the thing with social media that is really that you know is concerning for me is just the damage that it has done because of the keyboard warriors, you know, behind the keyboard and getting to say just the vile, nasty things. And, you know, these kids, their brains aren't developed. They're not ready to handle this. And then other kids are just ruthless, you know, especially when you can do it behind a keyboard and you don't have to be accountable. And, you know, we're seeing identities are trying to be formed by Instagram posts, you know, and if you don't get, I mean, it's pretty wild. If a kid puts up a post and they don't get enough likes within a certain amount of time, they take it down. And to them, what was just communicated to them is, oh, well, I don't matter. I'm not that important. Nobody likes me. I don't have a value because that's where they're finding their value in these social media posts, whether it's TikTok, Instagram. And then, you know, so the social media, the way as the church, I think kids are asking those questions, except when social media is trying to answer that, you know, that is a losing game. No matter what, if they're popular or not on those social media, you can be popular and you're still going to lose at that game. So how do we then come in and as a youth group and say, hey, actually here, let me give you value and it's not dependent upon anything you're doing or producing. Your value does not, because that's what kids are hearing in every aspect of life, intentionally and unintentionally, from adults. I don't think adults intentionally do this, but we do. We subscribe value to kids based on what they produce.
Yeah, we had a father who went into the section of the house where his daughter was doing her homework, and she said, get the F out of this area. And this is a very highly successful business person. And I must say this family doesn't darken the door of the church a lot. And she just laid into him. And he said, do you know what I provide for you? She said, do you know what I do for you? I'm working so hard to get into a great school so you can be proud of me. You should be thanking me.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa. So I look at our teens across this country have the highest depression rate, the highest suicide rate, the highest eating disorder rate, and their parents have the highest divorce rate. And a lot of parents in this and other communities say, we got Jack baptized and confirmed. We're focusing college right now and getting him in a great college. That's why you haven't seen much of us. He plays travel soccer and we're away almost every weekend. I think to myself, do you really want to do that? Is that what's going to form him into a person of great character, a person who feels like a beloved child of God, that God's with him or her in every situation in life, that they're never totally alone, that if there's something so big that they're looking into, a parent's illness or, you know, they get dumped by the person they really love and stuff, that God's got them. And to have the kind of character that they'll, you know, be generous, thoughtful, compassionate, caring, kind, and exercise self-control throughout their life. That makes for a wonderful spouse. That makes for a wonderful employee, a wonderful boss, wonderful neighbor, wonderful citizen. What is it that makes it so important for the kids to come to church and be formed in the faith?
Well, yeah, hopefully at church we give especially in like a youth group, we give an alternative to the rat race. We give an alternative to the, again, back to the, like, what are you producing? how are you doing that? But instead here we are giving a deeper, more foundational, well, let's talk about character. Let's talk about, you know, I always tell students, you know, if the day that I die, if on my tombstone, or if the way that people describe me and they say, man, Josh was, he was loving. He was patient. He was, and you just go through the fruit of the spirit, right? And you say, and if I'm described by those terms, then that's a life well lived. But if it's like, well, Josh really, he climbed the corporate ladder. He was successful. You know, he was able to live this type of lifestyle, whatever it might be. Like, those aren't the things I want people to say about me. Those things aren't bad, but that's not how I want to be remembered. I want to be remembered because of how I treated people. I want to be remembered, and I want to hand that down to my boys. And the only way I'm going to hand that down to my boys is I have to live it first, right? More is caught than taught, you know, so they have to see that in me. And so hopefully, you know, if a family decides, hey, we're going to come to Christ Church, or we're going to go and live, or we're going to pursue faith in some way, hopefully it's not just for the student, but it changes mom and dad too. And then, you know, and then the student sees that, and then they're getting it when they're with us in the youth group. And character is one of those things that I really hope that is kind of a result of these kids being involved in our youth group.
You know, it's funny, we had a Navy SEAL on about 4 weeks ago, and one of the questions I had for him was sort of like, well, what is a win for you? Because it's like you're in Afghanistan and you're, you know, every day is tough and you're always sort of fighting the fight. But like, you know, unlike, say, in business where you close a big sale or whatever, you know, you don't necessarily have that kind of a win as a Navy mm-hmm. SEAL. Sometimes you do, you complete a mission. Like, have you had sort of like things where you look back and be like, oh, that was a big win. That was great. We really turned that around. Or like, have you had those experiences?
Yeah, absolutely. I've had experience. So I had the pleasure of leading a group of high school guys for 5 years. And it was the same group of guys. We'd meet every Tuesday. And it's funny because a lot of those conversations, you know, we're meeting and those conversations sometimes get heated, or they're just, you know, I feel like I'm not doing anything because we completely got derailed. We're talking about just, you know, high school guy stuff. And I'm like, wait, let's bring this back. But at the end of that 5 years, they graduate high school, they go off to college, they come back. And those kids then would come and serve with me, like at a camp or something. And you would start to see that all the things I was hoping to be true of them were becoming true of them and were true of them. And you start to see the character, and you start to see who they, like the young men that they're becoming. And that was just a huge win, because you see it, you know, this faith formation stuff doesn't happen in, you know, hey, send your kid to, like, confirmation's a great example. Send your kid to confirmation and then they're changed. Well, hopefully it plays a role in that. But really, this is, you got to have long term. You know, it took 5 years with this one group of guys, spending it with them on a weekly basis. And then you start, and then, you know, I think they're all juniors in college now. And you see, wow, their faith is rich and deep. And they see themselves as playing a bigger role in society and in their communities. And it just, it's like, so the big win there was, man, week after week after week, and then you see, wow, that did make a difference.
And I think you've told me a statistic that you have like 40 hours with a teenager a year, and the parents have about 3,000, something like that. So how much of your work is involved with the parents? And what I've seen over the years, I've been ordained for 33 years now, is that the youth who have the strongest faith come from families that have strong faith. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I just interviewed a young man from our parish who's a senior at Greenwich High School who would like to serve as a youth representative on our vestry. And he has a wonderful, strong, kind of glowing faith. Mm-hmm. And he said, this church is like his family's second family. And so how much is the impact of the family on forming the faith, the values, and how does that interact with the church? So you can't do it all at home. But how does that work?
Yeah, the numbers you just referenced. Yeah, if I'm lucky, I get 40 hours a year with a student. That's spread out over a year. Parents are seeing their kids every day, before school, after school, on the weekends, at the dinner table. If I or we are the lone spiritual kind of examples in a kid's life, then we're climbing a huge hill. But if mom and dad have a faith themselves, and that is, like I said, more is being caught than taught, and that is just kind of around the dinner table spilling out, the way parents talk about faith, the way that they serve together, the way that they treat people, all of these things play into what's going to be true of the child. And so for me, I also, it's not just about, well, what are we doing for the 1 hour we get on a Tuesday, but also, hey, mom and dad, how can I help you? How can I come alongside you and partner with you to help you live out your faith, and then that be seen by your students? So I think that is so important.
Well, Josh, it's been great to converse with you. And I just want to ask you, is there one thing you would like listeners to take away today that is nearest and dearest to your heart about what you're about in this calling?
Yeah, you know, I so deeply believe that our students, that they want and desire a deeper faith, that they want and desire a deeper relationship with moms and dads, and I believe that these students are called to be a part of the church now today. They are called to use their gifts, their abilities, their talents now today in their schools, in their communities, in their peer groups, on their sports teams, at home. And so my hope would be is that families, is, you know, I don't want to be the only one that's recognizing that in their lives. I want moms and dads to see that, and then to encourage that, and to set their kids up to live out their faith with their gifts, their talents, and their abilities. And so how can we do that together? It takes the family, it takes the church, it takes the youth group. And so that we bring value. If I don't bring value to a kid's life, to a family's life, then what are we doing here? We bring value. And so we have to do it together. We have to partner together.
Well, Josh, that's great. And thank you so much for coming in. And it was great to get to know you. So and basically you do this on Tuesdays mostly?
So I meet with a high school group on Monday evenings, and then the middle school group on Tuesday evenings.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for coming to The Calling.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Josh. Yeah, great to be with you.
Yeah, thanks.